good, everybody in Chicago? This is the Spawn on Me podcast. This is episode 248 of our show. What is good, everybody out in Twitch land, out in broadcast land? We are chilling, hanging out, rocking a dope show. We are back on Twitch with some, after having some technical difficulties, as they say, out in the world. Those things happen. Plus, it was the like heat wave of all heat waves here in Portland. So that did not lend well to being in a stuffy room, trying not to die on stream, literally. So thank you, everybody, for coming through and hanging out. What's good? I'm here. My man, my mellow, the smooth kind of fellow. The one, the only, the man with the new... Oh, you got a new headset, too. It is Cicero Holmes. How you doing? I didn't see those.
What, my headphones? My headphones are... They originals.
Oh.
You just don't notice. It's my face is slimmer, therefore my headphones look newer. Sure.
Wait, is that a thing?
Now it is.
it is a thing now, yeah.
I didn't know that was a thing. I thought that was like some like face experimentation thing. Was it like a face off kind of experimentation thing?
Yeah, no. It took my face off. Let's see. It was not, but it is, I guess, a product of the new bourbon that I'm drinking, which is Russell today. Today's bourbon is Russell bourbon, which it tastes like a rye wheat blend. It has a weird aftertaste to it. It has a rye aftertaste. I'm not a big fan of rye. So if you see my face squinch up, it's from the rye.
He's puckering over there. Also joined with my other host, my man, my mellow, the smooth kind of fellow, the man who makes science look good, the man who makes STEM look good, the man who makes mini fros look good. It is Sharif Jackson of sharifjackson.com. How are you doing, sir?
I'm good, man. Interesting experience yesterday. Apparently I've awoken the Austin hive. I had a really crappy day. Yesterday, my girlfriend was watching Pride and Prejudice, which she loves. I've never really sat and watched it before. So I was like, okay, I'll sit and watch it. And I was like live tweeting it. I wasn't hashtagging or anything. I thought it was like good. And my mentions got flooded with
really?
People. I don't know if people just search out Pride and Prejudice or yeah. what, but I got like... Like, it was like I was saying something controversial. I just got all these people saying, you have to see the BBC version. You have to do this. You have to check out Sense and Sensibility. You have to check out Bridget Jones' Diary. Yo, let me tell you, Austin really? Hive is real.
That's kind of dope, though. Yo.
Yeah, it was dope. And, like, I was happy that I finally, because, like, my girlfriend's been, like, saying, you got to see this movie, like, for the past 5 years. And like I was like,
it dope? Because I haven't seen it.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it's if you like period pieces, great dialogue, and like shade, like it was great. You know, it was awesome.
Okay,
that's the best description of Pride and Prejudice ever.
Yeah. Now I did watch the 2005 version. So like Keira Knightley and Donald Sutherland and all those folks. But yeah, it was you know I enjoyed it. But yeah, I'm like. I tweeted this yesterday afternoon, and I'm still getting like notifications from people, like, "Hey, I'm glad that you discovered like Jane Austen. Check out these other things." I'm like, "Yo, Austin's real, yo. Austin love
the
is real.
Jane Austen hive is real."
Yeah.
I wonder who would be the like Jay-Z to Jane Austen. Like, who would be the because Bay Hive is real. Right. Beyonce folks stand super hard. I wonder who the like Jay in that situation would be.
Like from Vonnegut. Her like period, you mean?
Who would be the person that you don't really want to hear from, but they're kind of all always in the background?
Vonnegut or Ayn Rand. The Rand Hive.
Yeah.
Yes.
The Rand, yeah, that's a whole nother hive. We don't want that.
That's a different story.
That's a terrible hive. Yeah. Thank you, everybody, for your patience for the past couple weeks. It has been a little bit rough on the technical side getting things done because of, like I said, the heat and all those other things. We also had some technical difficulties trying to get actual streams out, but it's been super dope to have everybody come and hang out with us this week, especially because we have a fantastic guest, somebody I'm super excited to have on the show with us. If you've ever been to PAX, or you've been to GDC, or you've been to a game con, and you know the first place you kind of have to go to if you want to check out all the dope indie games is the Indie Mega Booth. We have the founder of the Indie Mega Booth, Kelly Wallach. How are you doing? How's everything going?
I'm doing very well. Yeah, been doing really well. We're getting ready for PAX, so this is good timing. Come on the show. It's good to see you guys.
Yeah.
And actually, I have seen every iteration of all the Pride and Prejudice movies, so I've never tweeted about it, but I'm like, ooh, I know that one, and the BBC version is really good. So I would recommend that you watch that one.
All right. Yeah, that's been the overwhelming response was that movie didn't have a proper Mr. Darcy. You got to check out Colin Firth. He's the real Mr. Darcy. I was like, okay.
Wow.
It's just everything about that story in that movie is just so it's very fantastical, I guess, is a good way to put
it's really
like
good.
I really
feel left out.
I think you guys should if you guys haven't seen it, I would check it out.
Yeah,
I came right. from there are very few times when I come onto the show and I feel really uncultured.
Right.
I haven't read the book. I bought the book and I got like 9 pages into it and I was like, I think I'm gonna watch the movie again.
Yeah. And the other bonus is a couple of years ago when that Pride and Prejudice and Zombies thing came out.
Oh yeah.
I said,
oh yeah,
I remember saying that, like, that looks amazing, but I can't see it until I see the source material.
Yeah.
So now that I've seen the source this adaptation of it.
A source material.
Now I feel like I can properly go into that and see how it is zombified. So it's a bonus.
Word up.
I dig that.
Yeah.
So not to be left out, I also just watched the movie that was based on a book. It was called Black Klansman.
Ooh.
Okay.
And Ricago, don't stop what you're doing right now, because you should continue to listen to the wonderful Spawn on Me podcast. That's why you're here. But once you're done doing that, the next free moment that you have, rush to your local cinema and go see Black Klansman.
Okay.
It was excellent.
Yeah.
It was excellent.
Good to hear.
Your local picture house, as they used to call it.
The local Bijou.
I really feel uncultured now. You just dropped Bijou. Anywho. Besides all the wonderful media that we have been consuming, Kelly, I want to jump right into it.
Let's do it.
I want to hear what the origin story was for Indie Mega Booth. It has grown in these like magical dope ways over the past couple years that I've been able to consume and kind of visit you all at conferences. But I want to know, like, where did this idea spark from? Where did the idea of getting all these folks together to showcase their work come from?
So I'm going to go a little back further than the start of the Mega Booth, because the origin story is like, it's kind of fun. Like, it's like superhero level.
We're
like,
into prequels,
story.
Baby.
Yeah, we're going to start with the prequel, with the gritty reboot of the prequel.
right. But not the BBC version?
No. That's
this
too
is the
fancy.
Christopher
That's
Nolan
too fancy.
Version.
Yeah. But Colin Firth is still in it. But before I got into game stuff, I worked as a chemist. So I used to be a scientist, and that was my thing. That's what I was doing. And I worked at a nanotechnology company right out of school at Penn State, which is where I graduated from. And then I got my dream job at MIT. And so I moved to Boston, and I was managing a chemical engineering lab. And I was like, fucking over the moon. And I was like, I'm going to go to grad school, because I was broke when I got out of college. And I was like, I can't afford to go to school again. So I was like, I'm going to work for a bit. I'm going to get this job at the school I want to go to. You know, it's all going to work out. It's going to be great. And then the lab exploded. Like, the lab
Holy
fucking
shit.
Blew up. A steam pipe exploded in the maintenance room. So it was in a sub-basement of one of the buildings.
Holy
and they were
shit.
Like, yeah, so they were doing like some sort of just like routine maintenance testing. And this like 6-inch steam pipe, like actually super dangerous. Like, it's a miracle that nobody died. It was like super scary. It broke and they couldn't shut it off. And it was going for like 8 hours and melted the tar on the roof of the building. So from like
wow.
the sub-basement
Holy
all
God.
The way out. And like, and it basically wow. rained in our lab for like 8 hours,
oh
which
God.
If you've
oh.
ever thought about science at all, like raining on a whole bunch of science is not really what you want to have happen.
Right. Not ideal.
So Yeah, it just totally destroyed everything. And so then my job, my dream job, turned into like basically insurance claims adjustment work, and it stopped like, heartbreaking. And I worked at a biofuel company after that was like funding research in our lab. That's a whole other podcast. But like that job also was just
was it run by Ed Begley Jr.?
It was basically run by Mr. Burns. Like, he was like the richest, oldest, weirdest person I had ever met in my whole life. Like, just everything about him was that. It was so bizarre. He like had no concept of money. He like bought this like plastic sealer thing, and he like made this big deal out of it. We all had to learn how to use it, and then he brought in a big giant rug. And he was like, I paid $50,000 for this rug, and it makes me feel sick. I want it sealed up in plastic. And I was like, that's my fucking student loans. Like, that's my, give me that rug. I'll sell that rug. I don't want to, like.
Sweet.
Man, he was bonkers. He was so weird. Yeah, so at this point, I'm like, I don't know if I want to stay in the sciences. Like, I don't know if I want to keep doing this. And I was looking into, like, I was interviewing at wineries and, like, looking at breweries and maybe getting into food science. And then I had a friend at the time who was like, I really want to get into making video games, because she was a programmer. And I was like, that sounds cool. And there's local meetups in Boston. And so she's like, I don't want to go to these things on my own. So I started going with her and meeting people. And like, something really clicked with me with the types of people who make indie games, because they reminded me a lot of the students that I worked with when I was at MIT, and just kind of like the people in the sciences that I like, that are a little like weird, they kind of drop out of other stuff. They're like creative, mm-hmm. they're entrepreneurial, they're like artistic, but they're also really technically smart. And so I ended up getting a job at a basically like a contract shop in Boston, and I learned how like project management for software works and software development. I actually started off as an admin assistant, so I started off as like a secretary and then had them train me as a project manager. And then during that time, I was dating a guy who was running Firehose Games, which is in Boston, and I was helping them out at shows and like starting to go to conventions and stuff. And he had like this kind of concept based around some stuff that had already been happening in the indie scene of like, why don't we get all of the indie people together and put them like on the main show floor, and then that way people aren't going to like just walk by, because this is when PAX opened up the sixth floor in Seattle, and like nobody went there. Like Notch had Scrolls, I think, was like whatever that game was. Like way back, and there was like he was up there, and then a bunch of like merchandise companies, and like just nobody came up there. And so all the devs, like all the indie devs that were there, were bummed out, because they were like, you know, we put all this effort into it, and like how do we get noticed, and it's really hard to compete. And so the PAX organizers have been awesome. Like, we went to them with the idea, and they were totally on board with it and have been supportive of the thing ever since then. And so I did it because I was like, oh, it'll be fun. And I like working with people, and I really like making lists, and like, it'll, you know, I'll organize it and it'll be fun. And then people were really into it. And so they're like, well, you're going to do it again. And so I did it again. And then at some point it was like about like 2 years into it, and I was still working at that job, and it just got to be this point where it was like the work was so overwhelming and everybody was really into it, and I had sponsors that were like, we want to give you money, and I'm like, I'm not a company, I don't really know how this works. And so I quit my day job and then started out like the Megabooth as a full-time thing, and that was like almost 5 years ago. So I've been running it for 7 years, and it's been like a full-fledged like self-sustaining company for 5 years now.
That's so fantastic. I mean,
it's like really crazy story.
That's a crazy story. Yeah. It's like I was getting out of this place that blew up. Yeah. And now...
Now look at me.
Now I run this booth and all these... It's fantastic to see just how that transition... Because I never knew that story. So now it even makes it even more cooler to be able to see where things have kind of landed and are still growing.
Yeah.
So now that you've kind of started that process, and now that that's a thing that you're 7 years into...
Yeah.
What's like the beginning stages of like the cycle of a year? So it's like, I know that usually during the kind of big shows, you'll have a presence there and you'll have folks kind of have their games there so they can be seen by the press and by the public. What's that kind of like cycle look like? Because we know what the conference cycle looks like in most ways.
Yeah.
But I wonder what the indie cycle looks like when you're kind of doing this and curating and bringing people together and all that and all those ways.
Yeah. I mean, for a show, it's probably like 6 to 8 months of planning work around it. So we open up submissions twice a year, and then people submit their games, and then we have a whole back-end system, and we have like kind of like a judging phase, and then what's called like a jury phase, or like where we make the final selections, and that probably takes like, you know, a little over three months or so, and then two or so months of planning. So it's like, basically, like as soon as PAX West is over, we already have a schedule for the fall of like when we're going to start opening stuff up for the spring. So like we'll probably open up submissions like in October. So there's like a couple weeks after the show where we're like, okay, like that went great. Let's send out thank yous to everyone and kind of like recoup, and everyone like sleeps a little bit. And then we just like start the whole process over again. And then in the spring too, like because GDC is really close by to PAX East, it's actually kind of intense. And then so I have a second job, which is I'm the chairman for the Independent Games Festival, which is at GDC each year. And so that's been going on for about like 20 so years. I think this is my fourth year running it. And we also do a showcase for the Mega Booth at GDC. So it's like GDC is a little like bonkers for me, and then PAX is like 2 weeks later.
Oh my gosh.
And we're a really small team. Like we're I think like six people right now, and not everybody's full time. So it's like everything is very like, I have a system, you know, like we have a lot of like particular ways that we do things and schedules and like a super awesome team. But like, I think sometimes people are like, they're either confused that it's a full-time job. They're like, oh, is there enough work to like do this all the time? You know, or they think we're like a giant corporation, you know, that we're like this big, huge thing. And I'm like, nope.
No in between.
Yeah, it's none of those. We're like five or six people. So when you're wondering why something isn't happening fast enough, like that's why.
Yes. So if you're six now, I'm assuming that when you first quit your job to do this, the team was even smaller, or maybe even you. Like,
yeah, it like, was me.
Yeah. So
yeah.
So like, what were like some of the milestones when you realized like, I need more people? You know, like what kind of things happened to make you grow the team?
Well, I will, like, to be fair, like, the community pitches in, like, a lot. Like, the reason that the Mega Booth works is because our community is amazing. And one of the things, like, I kind of joke about this, but it's true, is that when I first started up my own company, I was like, I don't want to work with assholes. I'm allowed to curse on this, right? Okay. Okay. I was like, it's a little late for it, so I hope so.
It's encouraged.
Yeah. And, like, and, you know, I really feel like we've been, like, we curate for the companies and the people and the community, because if you're spending 90% of your time managing 10% of the people, like nothing is ever going to get done. Right. And like, and I really want it to be that everybody is pitching in and contributing. And so really early on, like it was like tons of people volunteered and helped out. And there's like so many people who made all of this totally possible, but I was the only person who was like, okay, this is like my job now. And it was basically after the first show where I was like, okay, this is like, it's too much work for one person. And so then I hired on a second person who is like my first official employee. And then it was just the two of us for a while. And then we hired a third person who was a designer. And we basically had that team for like a couple years. Like it was like 3 to 5 or 6 people. Like we would have some like contractors come on and off, and some people that are more like kind of core like volunteers that we like pay every once in a while, or that pitch in more than like other people do. And then lately, it's really been this thing where, like, for a long time, I was artificially kind of propping up the company by, like, overworking and underpaying myself and then just burning out constantly. And I did that for a while. And then, like, at the end of last year, like, just everything in my life just totally fucking blew up. And I was like, okay, I can't do this. Like, how many people does it actually take to do this work? So that's kind of where we're at now, is we're really figuring out, like, what does it look like if I'm not the person who's, like, in all the spreadsheets and doing every single email and, like, you know, also getting sponsorship and also curating the games and all, you know, like, it's just, I'm like, okay, what should my job actually be, you know? And like, and then let other people like get on. So I think now, like, we're probably going to have like one or two more people that we need. Like, we don't have a designer still. So we need that. And then like, some like administrative help. And then I think we'll be pretty good for what we want to do. Like, we can have a really big impact with a small team because of the support of the community and because of like the way that the whole thing has, like, the foundation has been built, I guess, over however many years now.
So I guess I want to talk about one of your jobs that you talked about, Kelly, and that's curation. So, yeah. you know, you talked about the gaming submissions, and we've got a question in the chat. Is there some type of ceiling and or floor for independent game submissions? How do you determine... what is independent, and how small can the budget be? How large can it be?
Yeah, so
before you say yes or no.
Yeah, so we I mean, we have the thing kind of similar to what the IGF does, is like, do you consider yourself an indie developer? You know, cuz like us defining what that means, it's like it's kind of fluid, you know. Like when I very first started, if you took any publisher money, like you were not an indie developer, you know. And now it's kind of like, okay, well now there's indie publishers, or now there's, you know, like the, you have to like eat while you're making a game, you know. It was very like, I don't know. It was kind of this like, no, eat ramen and live in your basement, you know, kind of thing. yeah. You know, and tides kind of change on that sort of stuff. So we have that part of it. But then when it really comes down to it, like we let our community of, so the judges are primarily other developers and people that are in our community who have worked with us in the past. And so we kind of like, we'll put it out into the submission, just be like, hey, everyone debate this, you know, and then kind of see where we think it's falling. And then we'll have another discussion when we do the game selections as well. So like, in the last like maybe two rounds or so, we've had a lot more like indie publishers, to the point where we've like kind of tried to come up with some rules around how that would work. And like, we're still trying to figure out if it's even fair, or like if it would work in the long run, you know. But there's just so many of them, because the funding issue for a lot of developers, especially the cost of getting out to a conference, is really, it's a lot, you know, especially for like truly small teams. Like that's a lot of money to invest in. Like, we have a lot of like kind of grant and scholarship programs, and we have an alumni fund where people who were in the booth before pitch in to like help pay for mini booth spaces. And but it's still like, you know, we can only kind of do so much. And so I think the rise of that kind of like indie publisher thing has come from a lot of that, where it's just like, it takes a lot of money to make cool things, you know, like to live and just do stuff, regardless of whether it's indie or not.
Have you seen a, because I've seen in some aspects over the years, there have been kind of trends in the games that are being made, and it's been not copycatting of, you know, people kind of figuring out that this is the one thing that's hot and everybody kind of jumping on that thing. But do you see that happening often? So it's like, now we're in the new world of battle royales everywhere, right?
Yeah,
but battle royales are kind of expensive to make in a lot of ways. They have the infrastructure to do that kind of stuff. Have you seen some of that be a part of the curation process, when you're seeing multiple games kind of having the same theme?
You know, we used to get that a lot more, and I get that question a lot. And we did, like, when FTL came out, like, everyone made an FTL game or an FTL style game after that. I think for stuff like things that are trending in AAA tend not to really trend in indie. It tends to, like, everybody kind of tends to, like, focus on what worked well in an indie context. And so, like, I see a bit of it, you know, like, I think, like, interactive fiction, visual novel kind of style things are kind of, like, have a little bit of a rise. There's always, always a lot of local multiplayer games, which, like, I will kind of put this out there, like, they're fun, but there's a lot of, like, there's a lot of issues kind of around it, because they tend to show super, super well at a convention, because it's, like, everybody's playing it, and they're having fun, and, like, you're in a group, and it's great, but they don't sell on the same kind of level, because you have to, like, first off, only one person needs to own the game, you know, like, especially if it's local multiplayer, and, like, people don't tend to get together in groups like that to play games, and, like, there's a lot of, like, really intense, like, community building that has to go around those kinds of games. But, like, we've been getting a really high number of local multiplayer co-op games for, like, years now, and I'm not sure where that started. I think it was, like, maybe Sports Friends or something.
Sports Friends
is awesome. Like, you know, it was super great. Nidhogg, and I love those guys. Like Nidhogg. And there's are like, you know, Towerfall is another one. But then, you know, there definitely are ones that do it. But we get like kind of a disproportionate amount of them. But it, like, yeah, I haven't, like, there was like kind of zombie stuff for a while. And now I think it's a lot more like, I see a lot of like fun color palettes, a lot of interesting writing, like thoughtful games, I guess. But also like we tend to accept games that are like that, and I think attract a community that makes that kind of content, you know, as well too. So like, we don't really get too many like shooting games submitted, or, you know, like first person shooters where you're running around fighting in a war, you know, like we get like four of those a year maybe or something. And like,
next year you will have 17 battle royales.
Do you often, when like you guys are going through like your selection process, do you think about sort of how a game can show in a demo? Like, is that sort of like more important than, because like, I'm thinking about like, you know, a heavy narrative game that'll take you a while to really figure out kind of what it is, and then it's great, but it might not show well in a demo space. So like, do you think like more about how it shows, or how awesome like the overall game will be, or is it kind of like a little bit of both?
Yeah, it's a little, so we, so internally, so we have three categories of the voting. So it's game, company, and presentation. And the presentation part, some of it is like, did they read the directions? You know, because like they're going to be have to be following a lot of directions to like be getting ready for the show. Right. So part of it is that read the questions, follow the directions. But then the other part of it is like, yeah, like how is it going to show on a show floor? And that could be anything from like, yeah, is it like a really in-depth RPG that's going to take a while kind of thing, or like a CCG game or something like that, or like do they have a really cool idea with how they're going to like set up their booth space or something kind of like fun that they're going to do with it. But I think we try to get a good representation of everything, even if it's going to take a while for the game, like for people to get into the game, because there are audiences of people who just love that stuff and they'll just find that one game and they'll sit there and they'll play it, you know. Like we always have like some sort of really complicated in-depth game, like our tabletop area is like that. Like we don't have tons of tabletop games in it, but people who love tabletop games are just like, yay, tabletop games, and then they just sit there and play them all day, right? Yeah, so we definitely take it into consideration, you know. Like, and some stuff it's just like we had a game submitted that like you basically have to be out in a field to play it, and it's just it was like an AR experience thing, like, and something like that. It's like, right. Yeah, and it's kind of like, okay, well, we just even can't technically show it, and just having like a video, you know, we're kind of trying it out and like figuring out like, can is there a way to get around this? And sometimes we have weird things that are just like they need special equipment and all this stuff, and it's just like, all right, well, that's kind of fun, like it'll be a good experience for people on the show floor, even if it's something that like you can't really like play at home later because you need like, you know, a custom controller kit or something that someone made.
have there been any of those games that you're like, oh man, we, you know, that we just don't have the ability to show this game in a convention space, but those games have then gone on to some modicum of success that you can think of?
I don't think so, actually. I mean, there have been some that we haven't shown for like content reasons that have done well, you know, and that's just like kind of a choice on like the types of content and things that we have in the space, like things that tend to be like incredibly violent or, you know, address topics that we're not necessarily wanting to like get into or whatever, or like that we've had some of the games like that that I guess that haven't been in that have like been successful later. Those primarily tend to like have some sort of like publisher backing or something though along with it, but I think that's, I don't think there's any, I mean, we've had one or two games in the past where I'm like, we didn't show it, you know, for whatever curation reason. And then it kind of like got some buzz later and I was like, oh shit. But it's only been like, it's been a small number. And I always go up to them and I'm like, oh, I'm sorry, I was wrong. Like, there's usually like, you know, some kind of reason behind it and trying to have the conversation about it. But yeah.
When it comes to stuff like that, do you feel like at this point, since you and your crew have been in the space for a while now, that folks are looking to you for advice in same ways in terms of trying to kind of in the early beginning stages, that where they're thinking like, this could be a mega booth title where some you guys could be showing this off, and those folks are trying to figure out like, hey Kelly, so I have this idea and it might be pretty good if I do this and this, so you know, can you help me out, kind of think about how this would actually work, so I might be able to get into the space at some point. Are they looking at Megabooth as a place to like kind of be the incubator or thought, you know, think tank space for kind of making those games too?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. Like that used to happen to me a lot earlier on. Like I worked with a lot more developers directly and I was more involved in that kind of stuff. And then at some point the community got so big and it just became too difficult. And like the weight of what I was saying became too much. You know, we're like, I don't know, it's kind of difficult, especially for like new and younger developers, and like the power dynamic around that I feel like is a little unbalanced. And so it tends, the people that I tend to talk to now are more like people that have been in the industry for a while or that I know kind of on a personal level, or they will talk to like other people on the team. I think maybe I might be a little intimidating also at this point, and I don't try to be, but I'm also like, I think that might be part of it, where people are like, I just wanted to say hi, okay, I don't want to bother you, goodbye, you know, so they're not really like asking me too much about that stuff. But like during the curation process, you know, I think that like people do use like getting the game accepted or not as kind of a litmus test of like, okay, is this game, is there something there for it? You know, like we've had people like resubmit multiple times, and like they don't, some people have not shown off the game in between, you know, like they'll just kind of submit it a few times until it's at a place where like, okay, it looks good, you know. We used to have like some publishers that would submit things and just see if we picked certain stuff or not, you know, like they wouldn't say that, like they wouldn't say who they were, and then they would just like put it in there and then like ask me later and be like, hey, like, why didn't you pick that game? Oh. Yeah, 'cause then they're kind of like, they're kind of curious about it too. So, yeah, but I do think like now we've gotten that reputation, and part of it is like, you know, we do have quality stuff. And the other part is I think people like to be included in the community, and it feels to them like they've gotten like their game has gotten some sort of legitimacy. And then them as a company has also been welcomed into a community.
So I want to know, what are the things that you currently like to play? Because I know that I'm sure that having to see so many games throughout a year could probably burn you out too.
Yeah.
What are the things that you kind of look forward to when you're like, all right, so I have all these games now around me. Yeah. This is the kind of stuff that I'm looking forward to play.
Well, so this is actually going to be a semi-disappointing answer, is like, I personally primarily play management simulation games, which like maybe is not a surprise based on like what I do for work, but yeah.
That's kind of dope.
Yeah, so I'm just basically like, I'm still playing The Sims 4, like, you know, I'm playing City Skylines, like, that's my, like, when I'm like, okay, I'm going to sit down and play a game, like, that's normally what I'm playing. Nice. I played a ton of Banished, like, I got into Dwarf Fortress for a while.
Cool. You made it out alive too.
Yeah, apparently. I was gonna say, look at me, I'm in a cave, so like maybe not. I was like, maybe I should turn on some lights or something. Now that the sun's set, I'm like, hello.
It does look like there's like a fire illuminating your face right
now.
Does
it look okay? Should I just leave it? Does it look intimidating?
No,
does
you're
it
look fine.
Impressive? It looks cool.
No, you're fine. No, it's dope. Yeah,
it looks like you're about to tell like a really creepy story. That's awesome.
Gather around, kids.
Right, gather around.
Let me tell you, indie kids, what it's really like. No.
Right. Yeah.
Tell you the story of the steaming pipe.
Let me tell you before green light. No. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Yeah. So you know, so you know, obviously you're like, you know, very influential in the indie scene, right? And I know that in the past couple of years, at least me, I've heard a lot of, for the first time, at least for a gamer, probably, you know, that's not in the industry, I've heard like big criticism on Steam. Like before, it was like, you know, we all loved it and we were like, everything's there and that's where we can get our indie games and our AAA games. But I know, you know, and like obviously there's like Disora and, you know, and Itch.io and good old
there's
games.
A million. Yeah.
Yeah. But I know that there's definitely been, you know, both AAA and indie devs that, you know, will either launch on other platforms, you know, like Activision launching, you know, Destiny and Call of Duty on Blizzard, you know, and like all of that stuff. You know, do you think that it's good to have sort of a central hub for, you know, for your sort of indie type games, or like, do you think that it's better to have it kind of, you know, like back in the day, you just had it in your different folders and you open them up and stuff?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, like when I was first starting out, it was like a decent amount of time before Greenlight, and I mean the App Store was also different. There were a lot of indie developers who were doing well on the App Store, and that was kind of like a thing where everyone was making mobile games for a little while. And like at some point, it just like so much new stuff started coming out, and so many new platforms, so many games, right? Like if you look back at like how many games used to be released on Steam a couple years ago versus like how many are released, I mean, I'm just gonna make up a random number, but like, you know, like 10 games a month versus like 1,000 or something, you know, it's like some really like
it is
really big, crazy
magnitude.
Yeah. And like the discoverability issue is really, really, really big problem for indie developers. And so like then roles like us, like curation roles, have become incredibly important. And there's a lot of these platforms that like are trying to solve the curation through like AI or through, you know, basically like technical means. And I'm very much like hand curate, because one of my friends has said it really well. She's like, you know, you just know it when you see it kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I don't really feel like that's something that you can just kind of like program in, you know, like Facebook tried it and like now look at us. So it's kind of like, and so like, and you know, and another part of it is like, it's good to have the competition, right? Because you don't want to have this thing that like people can't get on. But then for the people who get into the walled garden, it does really well for them, right? Like they,
I don't know.
So it's kind of, I'm not totally sure like how I kind of feel about it overall. Like the democratization of making games, I think, is really awesome. You know, having competition in the platforms is really awesome. But I think for a lot of indie devs, they're just like, well, now what do I do? You know, because it just used to be like, okay, I put it on this storefront, or I put it here, or I talk to this person. And now all of that has become so convoluted. But then I think it's making like for really interesting kind of like alternative marketing and grassroots. And like, that's why going to things like events are important. Yeah, I think it's a complicated question.
Yeah.
I wish I knew.
How connected are you to the local indie gaming scenes in the major cities? I know that, you know, here in Chicago, there is a, I just lost the name of the place. Bitbash. Yep. Yes, exactly. Bitbash in, here in Chicago. Yeah. Sorry, Bitbash.
I'm Bitbash now.
Right, Bitbash exactly. Yeah, Bitbash is great. I was drinking too much bourbon. That's so how connected are you guys to some of the larger small indie events that are going on around the country?
Yeah, I'd say fairly well connected. I mean, people who organize events, there's not too many of them, you know, so you kind of like, right. And it's funny because we all, I think not everybody knows each other, but we all kind of know each other, but we're a bit busy. Right. So it's like when you see each other, you're just like, yeah, I got you. Like, I know what you do. I understand you're busy.
Right.
And then every once in a while, once in a while you can kind of get together. And like, there was this university in Canada that did like a academic study on the Mega Booth and its community, and they did two papers actually, and then they held like an academic symposium about this idea of cultural intermediaries, which is something that they were like doing research on us for. And it's basically like being able to speak multiple languages. So like we can speak like the business language, and then we can speak like the artistic indie developer language, and then we can also speak this like, you know, publisher language or whatever. They like had a whole symposium around that, and they invited a lot of people who organize events or who do things that are in similar spaces. And like all of us were like, oh my God, we never get to sit in a room with each other, you know, because like nobody holds conferences for people like us. Like everybody holds them for developers or for like, you know, like business stuff or whatever. But and so it was actually really nice to get us all in a room together, because like, the, you know, and at some point you're just kind of sitting there and you're like, I've never spent more than like 20 minutes talking to another person who like organizes an event that's similar to me, because they're always just like, okay, I know you're busy, bye.
Right. we've got to create an event for people like you. And we'll call it Conference Con.
I love
that. Sounds awful.
That's the thing.
Yes. Oh, that sounds so terrible.
That's the thing. It sounds so boring. Yeah. No one.
Yes.
There are so...
Yeah. Oh, that sounds so terrible.
There's conferences for everything. Yeah. Well, this is the thing. Like, when I talk to people who are going to start up their own conferences, a lot of them are like, I want to do it for a person like me, you know? And I'm always like, well, who's your audience? Like, you know, are there 50,000 people like you that are going to show up to your thing at some point? Yeah, so I've never been I'm going to get all the organizers together. Maybe I should.
No, you get so you have Conference Con, and you can
the most well organized conference in the whole world.
Right. Yes. Amazing. It'll be held in the reception area of a Howard Johnson.
No way. It'll be like Cayman Islands. It would be amazing. It would be so good.
If you're gonna put it in the Caymans, and I want to go to Conference Con. You're gonna put it in a dope place. I want to go.
Let's go to Conference Con.
Yeah, it's not gonna be somewhere where it's cold and sad. It's gonna be warm and sunny, and we're all just gonna sit and talk. And we're gonna have cool t-shirts, catered meals.
There'll be a symposium.
Yeah.
Symposium called Code Switches for Coders.
So good. Yeah, that'll be a whole other. That's a whole other conference.
Yeah, I like that.
So we're gonna take a quick break. We're gonna let everybody get some water. We're going to figure out where Conference Con is actually going to be held.
Cayman Islands.
And then we're going to take Cayman Islands.
Fiji.
Oh, man.
Before it goes away. Yes, let's do it.
And we'll be right back in 2 minutes.
What's good, Internet? This is Austin Walker, a.k.a. Professor Killer, a.k.a. David Foster Flawless, a.k.a. Bars Von Trier. You already know what it is. And since you do, you should also already know that Spawn on Me keeps it real when it comes to games, culture, and holding it down even when the world is on fire. Welcome to Bricago, y'all.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Spawn on Me podcast, episode 248 of our show. What up, what up, what up? Thank you, everybody, to podcast land and in Twitch land for hanging out during the break. Definitely cop a shirt. See if you like some merch. We got dope stuff coming, and we have some fun stuff coming very soon for a special show that we have coming up at PAX there. So we'll talk about that in a little bit. But we're rocking with Kelly Wallach from Indie Mega Booth, spitting dopeness on the airwaves for everybody to hear. I want to jump right into the big show. I know that other folks think of E3 as the big show, but I think of for indie cats that PAX is kind of the big show.
Yeah, I agree.
Like that conference is the one that when people go to it, you have the most space, probably. You have a lot of folks, you have the public there who's super excited to be there and watch that stuff. Talk a little bit about what's going to happen for Indie Mega Booth at PAX this year.
So PAX West, we're in our same spot, so we're on the fourth floor, which we're never giving it up because it's going to be so impossible to get that spot right now. Like, we got it way long ago. Actually, one of my favorite things about it is that it's surrounded by walls on all sides. So when fans come into it, they get trapped and they have to walk through the whole thing. That's my favorite. That's my favorite part. PAX East, they can run away from us. They can't. PAX West, they're trapped. Oh, nice. They got to look at everything. So that's the best part about it. So we're doing that same thing again. and we're going to have our merch booth, and we work with I'm 8-Bit. So I'm going to show off my shirt. This is our one from last year.
I'm 8-Bit makes such good stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so jealous. Yeah. They make such good stuff.
Yeah, they do cool stuff. So these are ours, and then they sell their cool I'm 8-Bit awesome stuff. And we normally have hats, which are also super cool, like the flat brim hats, which look awesome.
Yes.
So we'll
I have one of those.
Do you?
That okay. I'm never giving I was gonna up. Say, I'm awesome. Never giving yeah. that hat
okay,
up.
Okay, good.
That hat is so good.
So we're doing our merchant booth and stuff again. Yeah, so we'll have the mini booth in the tabletop area. And so the mini booth area is like, it's like a shared space between a lot of different kiosks. And so those tend to be kind of like weirder or more interesting games or smaller teams or just companies that kind of just don't want to deal with having like a whole big, you know, regular booth space. And then we'll have our tabletop area. And the tabletop and the mini booth, we rotate the games in there. So there's different games on Friday and Saturday than there are on Sunday and Monday.
Nice.
So if you're at the show and then you can come back, you can check out different games. And then the regular booth spaces are just there for the entire time. So that's kind of all the... Oh, and then we're doing a panel. And then I'm on two panels, aside from the panel that we're doing.
Yeah. So wait, before we get to the panels part, I'm showing the video of the montage of all the games that are going to be showcased in the mega booth, the mini booth, and the tabletop space.
Yeah.
How many games in total?
Oh my God, I don't know. 5 million.
It's 5 million games in total. It's gonna be 17 million games.
17 million games. No, I think it's around like 90.
Yeah.
Wow.
But that's still a lot of games. Yeah.
Holy shit.
Well, it's so many games.
Well, because we rotate the games in the mini booth and the tabletop areas, and some companies show multiple games, and so the games tend to be a little higher than the amount of teams and stuff, but yeah, it's still a lot of stuff. It's good though. I think it's a solid couple days of going through and like checking out everything, you know.
Oh yeah. Like the best part about the booth and I love how you when you had the montage video up, you like show the game and you show exactly where they're going to be in the booth itself,
nice.
Which is super dope. It's super super cool. But I feel like it's always been a thing that whenever I go and see the booth, I always am like turned around by something else that I see out of the corner of my eye.
Yeah.
How does it kind of work when you, is it one of those things where it's like, you got folks who are like fighting for space. They're like, I want the corner spot. I want this piece. I want that part. Is it something where when you're doing the curation of the booth itself as well, that you're like, I want this to flow in a specific way so that everyone kind of gets some love?
Yeah, I was going to say, we solve that problem by not giving people the option to pick where their booth space is, and we do it. Right. Can you imagine asking like 80 people where they want to be? Yeah, no. But I mean, actually, so we used to kind of do it that way when it was a bit smaller. And then what changed it actually was when we first showed That Dragon Cancer. Was like really mindful of like, how are we actually going to physically show this game in an environment that's like you know, pretty jazzy. And like, I really like, we were showing Crypt of the Necrodancer around the same time too. And I was like, I do not want Crypt of the Necrodancer next to that Dragon Cancer. Like, it would just be offensive nightmare. And so like we ended up putting it like kind of in a back corner, and there was like a space that we have set aside for like storage stuff, which was actually kind of a quiet area where people could go if they like got too overwhelmed. And like the guy who was showing it was also like, I need to like sit for a bit. And then we had like a lot of the like kind of more quiet, like interactive fiction or thoughtful games like around it. And then we had like kind of like the louder dancey stuff. And so we are actually pretty particular about like the flow and like imagining the flow of like how people are going to perceive it as they're walking through. And then also taking into consideration like something like a local multiplayer co-op game or a VR game is going to have like a lot of like crowd and like stuff going on around it. And so those tend to get on like corners or where there's aisles or something because they physically need the space like for the traffic flow. I mean, at PAX West, it gets pretty... it's pretty bad anyways. I think the enforcers spend most of their time just being like, move.
Now, since like you're probably, I'd imagine, just running around during these things from panels to making sure everything like, you know, is actually staying stable, do you get a chance to actually interact with the fans, you know, or like, are you always kind of just running back and forth trying to handle things?
I mean, fans, not so much. Like, Indie Mega Booth is kind of one of those, like, I always say it's kind of like insider baseball, you know? Like, we, in the industry, people really know us and really love us. And at PAX, we have fans, you know? And those are, like, we're starting to, like, try to grow our consumer audience. And so, like, we started a mailing list that's, like, specifically for people that are fans of indie games and fan of the Indie Mega Booth. And that's something that we're going to start growing in the next year or so. But, like, I'd say like the kind of the average like fan goer, you know, doesn't really know like who I am or who the Mega Booth is. Although I have like run into people in the bathroom and they're just like, oh, you know, what are you here for? And I'm like, oh, I run the Mega Booth. They're like, oh my God, I love it. You know? so I've definitely like gotten it before, but I'd say fan wise, like not so much. Developer wise, like I will normally spend a lot of time during the setup going around and saying hi to people and introducing myself. And the rest of the team interacts a lot with the developers and stuff as well too. But like I said, the community's kind of gotten big, and it's like, as much as I want to like say hi and like get to know everybody really well, like I think I probably know more than they know about me at some point because I've been looking at their game and like, you know, I get feedback on who they are and da da da. Even if I don't get a chance to like talk to them, I'm like, I know who you are.
You.
I got you.
That's great. Yeah. That's great. I know that some years there have been a theme, or at least kind of the idea of a theme. Mm-hmm. Is there one this year as well?
Yeah, our one this year is cyberpunk. So like the So earlier in the year it was like actual future cyberpunk. So like modern day cyberpunk, you know. And then the one for this one is what people in the 80s thought cyberpunk was going to be like in the future.
Right.
Oh, that's dope.
Yeah. So this is like Blade Runner type stuff.
Yeah. Kinda. Like old Blade Runner instead of new Blade Runner, which
is weird. Yeah, I assumed we were talking about old
Blade Runner. the actual Blade Runner. We don't talk about the other one.
Yes.
Yeah, actually, and I already have a theme that I want to do for next year. I'm actually super into, like, art and visual design and, like, the aesthetic of things. Like, the t-shirts are actually kind of a big deal for me because, so, like, when I had said when I was first starting out, you know, like, just everybody I knew, all the guys just wore video game t-shirts like all the time, and they were just ugly and they were stiff, and like they're like, it was free, and they just keep it forever and wear it, and that's like their game developer uniform. And I was like, I do not want to see my boyfriend wearing these ugly ass video game t-shirts. So I was like, I'm gonna make a nice soft video game t-shirt that I don't feel bad touching, and then also like has a cool design on it. So it's like been my whole thing, is I'm like, I want game developers to dress better, and so I'm like doing it one t-shirt at a time. And so like, we're pretty like we try not to make them look so like, hey, it's a video game kind of thing, and like have like some kind of like fun with it and like play around with like art and design. You know, and in some ways like this t-shirt, like I've had people like just stop me and be like, oh, what is that from? And I'm like, oh, it's my company, you know, instead of people like just being like, oh, video games.
I don't want that video game shirt. Yeah. Why does that look like that?
There's still blows me away that just like, I don't know. I talk to people, you know, kind of outside the industry, and they're still just like, oh, video games, those are for kids. And I'm just like, still? Are we still?
Oh, yes. Oh, absolutely still.
We're still on that. Fortnite made $9 billion, and everyone in the world Actually, it probably made more than $9 billion. I made up a big number. It probably made more than that. Like, what's a big, crazy number? They made that yesterday.
That's a good jumping off point really quick. Because what's the biggest misconception about the indie space right now?
I don't know. I mean, I think it has to do, like, with games in general. Like, I think that indie developers and the games that they make, I don't think matches the kind of idea that people have of, like, gamers and, like, this kind of really, like gatekeepy, unwelcoming, bro culture-y kind of like thing that people have ideas about games. Like, indie developers aren't like that, and generally the people who tend to like indie games are generally not like that. Like, our community is awesome, and like the fans who come to PAX are super welcoming, and they're really diverse, you know. Like, I think super highly of, like, of all the people that are involved in, like, the indie space and the stuff that we do, and I think that that's really cool, and it's almost kind of, like, unique, I think, to a lot of industries, you know. Like, I don't know. I mean, I've never been in the music industry or film industry or something, but it doesn't seem like it's so kind of like, hey, we're all working together because, like, we all love doing this kind of thing. Like, it seems it's a little more like cutthroat, I guess. But maybe that's just my perception of it.
Yeah, it feels like the indie space consistently and constantly is always, you know, there's infighting in every group of people that you have. But it feels like people, when it's time to, like, you know, pull up your boots and get ready to do some dirt work, then, like, folks are, like, willing to do that work and also, like, help out folks who are younger than them or less experienced or any of that stuff. That being a part of the space has always felt really, really nice.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely a long way to go in, like, tech and game stuff in general, you know, as far as, like, increasing diversity in communities and all that sort of stuff, you know. Like, that's part of a bigger conversation. But, like, I think a lot of the initiatives and a lot of the good stuff that I feel positive about the tech industry growing forward, to me, is originating in the indie space, or at least it's like its kind of heart is there in some way. And I would actually kind of say another, like, misconception too is, I think it's just a maturity level of the industry. I think, like, there's less of the kind of, like, you have to eat ramen and live in your basement and, like, make this game and suffer for your art kind of thing. Like, I feel like there's a little bit more of, like, okay, like, we understand that you're a human being and, like, you need to be eating and living and, you know, if you got a house or kids or something like that, like, you can't just give it all up and run away and make a video game out in the middle of nowhere kind of thing. And so I think there's, like, that's still kind of, like, the idea, I think, or, like, this kind of concept of what the indie developer is, and, like, there definitely are people that do that, but I don't think it's, like, expected in the same way, you know. It's like nobody's kind of, like, pointing at you and being like, ugh, you know, you made money.
Ew, you made money and you got to feed yourself and live in a house.
So what you said kind of makes you think about one other topic that I hear, that I've heard a lot about for years, but I've heard about a lot kind of lately, which I guess you hear mostly about in the AAA space, which is, like, crunch, you know. And I don't think, at least I don't think about it when it comes to the indie space, because, as you said, there's sort of this assumption that it's just, like, you just disappear and eat ramen, so it's kind of like nonstop crunch, because you just kind of like give over, like, your life to it with this, like, one-person team or two-person team.
Yeah.
Is that something that you've seen as a, you know, as sort of the mainstream, like, discussion of, discussion of crunch has been going on? Have you seen that kind of mirrored in the indie space as well?
I think so. I mean, I think there's a lot of, like, I think there's a lot more acceptance of, like, self-care stuff and having work-life balance. I will say, I think the thing with crunch and indie stuff is it's a little less imposed from, like, a hierarchical sense, you know, like, where AAA is like, okay, like, you're going to do this and you just have to, or you're going to, like, lose your job kind of thing. I think it tends to be more, like, in the entrepreneurial sense. And, like, this is the thing that I struggle with, right, is that, like, it's your company, it's your baby, it's your thing, and, like, you feel like you can never work hard enough and never work long enough, and, like, and also, like, you enjoy it, you know. Like, when I was working at MIT, I was working insanity hours and I fucking loved it, you know. Like, I was so into it and I was really crazy about it, but, like, you know, and I've been having to get better at that. And one of my advisors had actually said something interesting to me about, like, a lot of times people use their company as a substitute for relationships, or, like, a relationship in their life. And, like, I think that's totally valid, you know. Like, it's pretty much, like, my entire existence and my whole identity is wrapped up into it, you know. And, like, you're thinking about it, even if you don't want to be thinking about it, it's still kind of, like, you know, in your subconscious, it's going. And so I think the crunch that comes with the indie stuff is a bit more of that. And it's kind of, like, this core deep emotional crunch, you know, like, or your like self-identity and worth and like, you know, if your parents love you kind of thing is like all tied up in like how much you're working and a little less of someone being like, you have to because we got to ship this game at this time kind of thing, you know? So I think that there's a lot of that. And I do see the conversations, or at least I definitely have the conversations individually with people on like, how do they deal with that and how do they balance it and how do they set their companies up to be sustainable and like, you know, real for everybody to be able to work on. And so I think that that conversation definitely happens a lot. And like, I mentor other people who like run their own companies and like I'm mentored by other people. And like, that's, I think that's a kind of like a you run your own company problem, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Man, all right. So we've got, you know, not a lot of time left. I want to get some important things out. There was a question in the chat about, and for those people in Bracago that won't be able to make it to PAX West this year, but want some of that really sweet merch that the Indie Mega booth has, is it possible to order it online?
So we don't have anything set up right now to do online ordering, but if you really want it, please email contact at Indie Mega Booth and we will just send you one. We'll figure out a way to make it happen. Yeah, I want more people. Want more people to wear the shirts. We're going to hopefully redo our website soon, and so that will be part of it. But yeah, if somebody wants to wear them, please email us and we'll get you a t-shirt.
Sweet. Right on, right on. All right. And one other question. This is an important one, Kelly.
Okay.
Apparently, you were supposed to buy tickets for Jay-Z and Beyonce for the Carters.
I did.
Did you?
Yes, I did. Actually, so my best friend bought them, and we're going to go see her at the end of September. Nice. Is this from the Rank It panel? Because I'm actually going to like write up a statement about why Beyonce should be number one on the Rank It panel. I got a whole Sweet. Fucking thing. Oops. And then somebody from the Bayhive came up afterwards and was like, basically, like, he did a question. He was like, everybody who, like, you know, doesn't think Beyonce should be number one, like, come and meet me in the Westin. And he came up afterwards and he's like, Beyonce's fabulous. I'm so glad that you brought her up. I was like, yeah, Bayhive. It's like, they're everywhere.
Shout out to Consuming Lipids who asked that question in the chat.
Yeah.
And said that he was the person who said that.
Oh my God. We actually, in our Slack channel for the Mega Booth, we have Beyonce emojis. We have a sleigh one and we have a single ladies and like a formation
fantastic.
One with the hat and the braids
nice.
And everything.
Nice. Lord. That's awesome.
Thank you for asking that question. That was the best question of the whole show. No offense.
We'll
no offense.
Do this.
Nicely done. Nicely yeah. done. Consuming with this and Cicero on that one. So we have to let you go because I know you have lots of things. Plus, it is now, from the way it looks like the witching hour.
It's 2 a.m. We've been up all night toiling.
We've been up all night. Yes, exactly. But you have a lot of stuff happening at PAX this year.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things happening. Besides, and I'll talk about some games that I really like that I'm excited about at another point. But you have a lot of things going on. You have the Rank It panel
yes.
with my boy Lang,
yeah.
Dave Lang and
the one and
crew.
Only.
Nice. One and only. That's going to be on Saturday, 3:30 to 4:30 in the Hippogriff Theater. So everyone in the chat and everyone listening at home, write these down.
And all the Bayhive, show up. Back me up on the Rank It panel.
Bayhive show up. If we can get Beyonce to your panel, then
holy
you win.
Holy shit. Oh my God. That would be the best thing
you
ever.
You literally win PAX at that point.
Yeah, I would win everything. I would just quit video games.
Yes.
Go and do conference
con.
Conference
con.
Yeah.
Well, yes. she can fly us all to Fiji.
Right, yeah, really.
We have the Canceling Apocalypse panel, The World is Totally on Fire. That's going to be on Sunday at 7:30 to 8:30 in the Sandworm Theater. That's going to be super awesome.
Yeah, it's like an improv escape room live.
Oh,
nice.
Oh man, I might need to
Yeah, it's going
to
be good.
Over and check that out.
Sean Baptiste is on it too. I don't know if you guys know him. Yeah,
Sean Baptiste.
Awesome. I love him. Yeah, he's
great. I mean, the panels that you're on currently are pretty damn dope. You have a lot of really fun folks on these panels.
Yeah, they're really good. And then another one, and we have a really good guest on that one.
Yeah, we have one more. Yeah. We have one more that I can see. And that is the Indie Mega Booth Building Bridges and Breaking Barriers panel. That's on Sunday at 5 p.m. Hippogriff Theater. It's going to be you, Abby Heppy, Julian and Ika from Outer Loop and creative director and product manager from Beautiful Glitch. And yours truly will be moderating that panel. What up? So we get a chance to hang out again.
Yes. Thank you so much for doing that, by the way. That's awesome. I'm really excited.
I get a chance to hang with you. Yeah. That's all I need. Aww. That's all I need.
Sounds great.
So a lot of stuff is happening at PAX. If there's any last things that you want to let folks know about Indie Mega Booth, about the PAX show, you have the floor.
So you should follow us on Twitter. So it's at Indie Mega Booth. We're on Facebook. We're on Instagram. If you go to our website, indiemegabooth.com, especially for those of you that aren't going to be able to make it to the show, we have information about all of the games and trailers and links and all that, so you can find out more about it. And you can also sign up for our mailing list there. Which we've been starting to use to let folks know, like, when are games launching, like, what shows are we going to be at, what cool stuff is happening. If you want a t-shirt, email contact at Indie Mega Booth, and we will figure out how to get you a t-shirt, all that fun stuff. And then if you're at PAX, you can come by the headquarters and just say hi to us in person and then see all the cool games. So I think, right, and come to the panels.
Yes, come to the panels, because the panels are going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, the panels are going
to
be fun.
I know the Rankit one is always super fun, too.
I love that panel,
always hilarious and always a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's good.
Kelly, thank you so much for coming through tonight.
I'm
so happy we finally got a chance to have you on the show. Please come back on, because it would be a lot of fun if you'd come back on in the future.
I will do that.
We'll dig into some more stuff about chemicals and about I want to know about that stuff too.
I don't get to talk about it much anymore, so I would totally go off about
I want to dig into some of that.
Yeah, we definitely got to talk some science stuff. That's kind of what I do that's my business.
Oh, that's awesome. Stuff, what field are you in?
I do math and physics.
Math and physics. So people are great. Totally. One of my first roommates was a math and physics person. So
So we could totally do some overlap.
Oh my God, that's great. Are you going to be at PAX?
Yeah. No, I'm going to be at Dragon Con that weekend, actually. For the listeners, actually, I'll be posting my Dragon Con schedule soon. I'm just waiting for them to give us the official okay, but I'm going to be on a bunch of science-related panels, there's that one called the Wakanda Science Institute.
It's gonna be awesome. That's amazing.
And they're going to be about the other ones generally deal with science in like education and science and pop culture and movies. So I'll be posting the exact times and all that stuff pretty soon. So if you won't be at PAX and you're in ATL, definitely check me out. And I also have an awesome cosplay, which I will not be spoiling because it's too dope. It will be awesome, so check me out.
So while you're doing that, and if you are going to be at PAX, when you are not at one of Kelly's panels, you should definitely come through and come hang out at our 250th show. We have our panel dropping Saturday, September the 1st, 4:30, Sandworm Theater. Come through. Throw your biscuits in the air. We will have some stuff for you if you roll through. It will be Blessing Adeoye Junior from OK Beast, and also Dave Hunt, aka Grand Pooh Bear, one of the dopest cats on the planet in the speed running world, rocking the stage with myself and Cicero Holmes, hanging out, doing all that stuff. So it's a very special show. It's that guy. It's a very special show. It is very cool that we're gonna have our 250th show at PAX live in front of a studio audience, as they used to say back in the day. So everybody, thank you so much for hanging out with us this week. Hit them with the social media business, Cicero, please.
Just because you said please, I will do so. Before I do so, Reef is going to be in the ATL. Someone near and dear, a Bracagoan that we know and love, is also in the ATL. That is Daniel Moore, a.k.a. Danimus Prime.
Yes.
And today is his birthday. So
happy birthday, Dan.
Big
happy
birthday shout
man.
To
we
Dan
love you, bro. Yeah.
Love you,
so,
fam.
Social media business is as follows. You want to follow us? Go to all of your social media platforms. Type in Spawn On Me. You can find us there. If you want to follow us individually, just check the bios. All our information will be in there. SpawnOn.me is the website. You can find this episode and all of our past episodes, all the stuff that we're doing, like PAX West, right there on spawnon.me. Catch us every Thursday night, 10:30 Eastern, 7:30 Pacific, right here on twitch.tv/spawnonme. If you miss us there, find your favorite podcatcher every Tuesday, starting the following Tuesday. to catch this episode and all of our episodes. And if it's a place where you can rate and review, please do so in your podcatcher. And obviously subscribe and tell your friends. We'd really appreciate that. And if you want to level up your Bricago-ness and level up your listening ship, you can go to patreon.com/spawnonme and donate as little as a dollar a month or a dollar a day. Either way, it doesn't matter. Oh. I'm Sally Struthers now.
Is that a tier? Is that a tier on our Patreon?
Right, yes. For $1 a day, you can help.
Dubby Stan Bourbon you can for a dollar a day.
Yes, you can feed a Bricagoan. So, a dollar, you know, as little as a dollar a month will get you all of our episodes, plus our extra episodes like Spawn on Me After Dark, and will help us to do things like go to places like PAX West. So we really appreciate that. And if you have a message that is greater than whatever the character limit is on Twitter or Facebook or whatever, you want to send us an email, go to spawnonmepodcast@gmail.com.
Nicely done. Again, thank you everyone here in Twitch land and podcast land. Kelly, thank you again for rocking with us. And everybody, we will see you all next week with more dopeness coming at you. Peace, peace, and more peace.
Peace.
We up out of here.
Peace.